Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Kirk Gray.
Hey, Kirk. You know, I just before we got started here, I was giving you a hard time because I figured it was snowing out there and all that other good stuff. But then it dawned on me that you hadn't talked about anything that you broke lately. So what's going on in your house these days?
Well, I'm not sure I broke it.
That's excuse number one. Well, it was somebody else.
Right. This is in my case, this was a normal use environment, a very new system. And that is, I finally, about May of this year, decided I deserved a brand new pinball machine that nobody's ever played. It's never been on location at a bar or a pinball arcade. And then I wanted this specific machine themed. It's a Deadpool machine. Anybody in pinball will know who the manufacturer is. But anyway, so I've had it since May. I probably play it four or five games a day, and pretty much every day, every other day, or something like that. So I estimate. I haven't looked at the audit list because pinball machines do keep track of how many plays they've had, how many quarters have been put in, all these detailed data of usage. And but it probably had under 100 plays. And you realize on location, that would be about a week, you know, right, of playing, yeah, for people in an arcade. But at home, you know, you expect really you're using it at a much lower usage rate than it would be in an arcade. Mm-hmm. So it's a great machine. I love the design. I played it in arcades before I purchased it brand new or bought one on order. So it was great. But what happened is pretty much one of the what's called a scoop, where the ball goes in and it's sensed that the ball is in this little pocket, and a solenoid pops it out once it registers what it's supposed to, what points and what action it's supposed to take. Mm-hmm. So,
this is like a little divot the ball bearing ish thing drops into. Okay.
Right. It's a little more of a little pocket than what we call a saucer, which it just lays on top of. But anyway, it wasn't ejecting, it wasn't registering, and it would only eject what we call a ball surge. When pinball machines normally, if a ball gets stuck somewhere, the pinball machine will do a ball surge, which means it activates all of its solenoids except for the flippers, and activates everything and to make sure it it dislodges it from wherever it might be hanging.
If it can get to it, yeah. Okay.
If it can get to it, if it's, you know, not stuck up in the wall and behind a plastic piece or something like that. So anyway, that was the only way it was ejecting the ball. So, of course, you know, I'm pretty comfortable with working on pinball machines now. And open it up, and it's a little micro switch that the ball comes down on.
So that senses the weight, basically.
The weight of the ball, and, you know, registers the points in the next action, and then sends a signal to eject it with the solenoid ejecting it. And of course, it's just a two pole switch. And I don't know if it's really helped or not, but they were all shrink wrapped at the terminals. But I pulled on one of the wires and it just came right off. So that was the reason the switch wasn't registering.
It
had not been soldered correctly. And, you know, all these components underneath and near solenoids receive a pretty good shock all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, little shock pulses all over. So it had broken, and I don't know, looking at the weld, how good that solder joint was, but it didn't look like it was wrapped through the hole of the tab, which would have helped.
Would have done the mechanical hold.
Would have done some more mechanical strength. Anyway, yeah, wasn't a big deal to cut off the shrink wrap and stripped the wire and put, you know, my wife even helped me solder it on, holding it. But, you know, so, but then I noticed at the bottom another piece, of half of a piece of something with a piece of plastic on it. And I didn't really look around. I looked around initially on the bottom of the playfield for where that might have come off. But of course, we've got the social media, which is great. There's a on Facebook, there's a pinball repair group, pinball enthusiast groups, and a lot of people in this very narrow field that are, you know, keep lots of machines and are really into it like me. And I posted a picture of the part, and they said, "Oh, that's the actuator on the end of stroke, which is on a pinball machine. The flipper coils, especially for the two right and left flippers, the most important part for the player. It has two conditions. One is flipping the ball itself, which requires a lot of power, and so it has a high voltage condition when it's flipping the ball. But a lot of, you know, if you watch good pinball players, and I don't know if I'm one of them, but they'll hold the ball. You can hold the ball or hold two balls by just holding the button down. It's called either do a live capture or a capture where you're just holding the flipper up and the two balls are resting on the flipper.
Okay.
Or one ball, and that allows you to stop and then let the ball roll down the flipper, and it gives you a much better shot. Well, when you're holding the ball up like that, you don't need the high voltage. You don't need the current to hold that ball with the solenoid. So there's an end of stroke switch that hits a reed switch that opens up and goes to a low voltage, so that when you're holding the coil, you're not going to burn it out with a lot of current.
Okay, so it takes a big chunk of current voltage to just because it's going to be hit with some mass in overcoming all that.
When multi-balls are going, you're hitting maybe two balls at once,
right,
or
so
three.
But if
you've got to have some energy, and these balls are about, you know, I don't know what the exact weight is, but
With the analogy is if you pick something up that's heavy, it takes some effort to get it up. But if you then hold it against the wall, for example, or hold it straight up over your head, it doesn't take as much energy or effort to do it. So it's saying, oh, let's not burn these things out. Let's go to low voltage and just hold it.
Right. Okay. And this has been in place for, you know, decades. I mean, they built this end of stroke switch to
after the first five machines burned out in 2 days.
Yeah, the coils were replaced. And coils don't fail generally. They're, you know, it's just a winding and it's, you know, solenoid. You do have to replace the sometimes the piston rod or the solenoid rod that goes in and out because it does wear out the plastic sleeve that it's in. So anyway, I posted a picture of this and they said, oh yeah, it's half of your end of stroke actuator switch, the piece that connects to the actual shaft of the flipper that turns and hits the top of the hits the switch when it's flippers in an up position so that it goes to low voltage.
Okay.
So you can actually play and never notice it. Okay.
Right.
This is one that protects the machine from people if they were to sit there and talk for 5 minutes. And I have done, you know, holding a ball with a flipper up while somebody's trying to explain something to me. It's just to protect the machine. And so you can play without that. But so I wouldn't have known it unless the micro switch on the bottom had broken and I'd opened the machine up. May have not seen that for a while. So when I posted it in the company's enthusiast page of the manufacturer, the actual head of the game, the guy that designed the game, saw that on Facebook, and I had written that it had been probably played less than 100 times, and this was a part that had been around for, I mean, decades. They've been producing this for decades. Mm-hmm. And the dominant player in the pinball machine world is made, probably 50,000 machines over, you know, two decades or more. They do thousands of machines a year.
Right.
And using the same assembly for pretty much every pinball machine, because flippers haven't changed. And
you wouldn't want it to change, because if you went from game to game and they had different responses or felt different or worked differently, that would be upsetting to your players.
Well, I mean,
unless you got used to it.
It's good. I mean, it's been a design that's worked for decades. And
well, I wonder, I mean, you got this in May.
Yes. Right?
So I wonder if they were feeling the supply chain shortages and had to go to different components. Or did you know it was really the same exact components they've used because you've seen other machines.
Right. And I'd like to compare another manufacturer. I would open it up, but I don't really like to get into my, you know.
Unless you have to.
Unless you have to. You lift up the play field, take off the glass, lift up the play field. But I would compare it with somebody else. But the interesting thing was, and I really appreciate the response, is the actual designer of the game, whose name is on the machine, saw that in the my Facebook post and said, hey, this is not, you know, it shouldn't have happened. And he says, I'm going to send you, you know, and then we started a messaging conversation and told him to buy my book.
but at least he knew.
Still know that I'm not just somebody, an average pinball player.
You're in there talking about soldering parts and troubleshooting. Oh, yeah. And you've done a bunch of these over the years.
Yeah.
Because you used to, you know, part-time I think it was just for fun at an arcade, saying, oh, yeah, I'll help you fix that.
Yeah. That's where I kind of did some initial before I had owned a pinball machine myself. Now I don't have to worry about it. I had to work on them myself.
Yeah.
Which I don't often. I mean, Well,
it's not like you pick up the pinball machine, throw it in the back of your electric scooter and head it down to the shop. You got to do a house call one of those, right?
Right. And that's one of the main costs for other people that can't repair their own machines. And that's why a lot of people that own many of them will learn to repair them, even if they're not engineers, because they do require maintenance. And because of the electromechanical nature of all the flippers and bumpers and switches and everything like that, inevitably over time, in the years that, you know, some of these pinball, one of mine's 30 years old, mm-hmm. they're going to need replacement and repair. So that's one thing you got to accept with pinball is you're going to require maintenance every once in a while. Something's going to break.
But it's way cool that the, you know, principal person at that company says, this shouldn't be happening. Tell me more. We've recorded, I don't know how many episodes where you've taken apart solenoids or fuses on your house and blenders and your TV and all kinds of weird stuff.
And nobody's come back. Not the designer himself that's in charge of the product really come back directly to me and say, hey, Kirk, you know, this is not, shouldn't happen. Here's what our problem is. And they explain, or he said that this was a designed from maybe 30 years ago when another company existed, a company mm-hmm. called Data East, which doesn't exist anymore, that made pinball machines, made quite a few. He said, that's a design from those days. And I'm thinking, God, you guys can. Okay. And he hadn't seen this before and even sent me a copy of his email to his quality department that does the thousands. You know, he talked about the testing that they do thousands and thousands of actuations and flipping of these assemblies and in the machine. And of course, I don't know how many samples they use and didn't get into that and stuff like that. And he explained, you know, that sometimes they've had problems with the vendors. And this is a part that's made stamped out of sheet metal that's got crimps, you know, bends in it and holes drilled in it. And so he explained that, you know, they're still using some mom and pop shops and
consistency is probably not just there.
But I took off the part and the pieces once he sent me. He sent me more than enough. He oversent. Yeah, I mean, he sent me six parts for each flipper.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I don't, I'm
you're good for the next 6 years.
I'm good for the next 6 years, right? But I don't expect this part to break, because it's a design that's been used, and you know, operators wouldn't be able to use it if it was every few hundred times they were having to replace it.
Let's flip this around though, Kirk. Let's flip this around. Let's say you're on the company side, right, and you're working with this designer. And this is a, so when we've, you and I, when we would first see a design that's been in existence for 30 years, we're not changing, we're not shipping the production to Vietnam. We're not, you know, it's been pretty stable and we've just not seen failures with it whatsoever. You and I would go, all right, solid. Don't touch it.
Yep.
You know, we wouldn't, if we saw something, it would make the news. And I think that's credit to this team that said, that's not normal. And so tell that's me more, right? And let's make it right.
And that they were paying attention to the web, what the web was feeding back immediately to them.
Yeah, and I think a lot of companies do that, some better than others by far, but it's a source of information of what's going on. Imagine, you know, like if you're in a company and somebody complains online on it and you reach out to them, one, it's good customer service, but two is, from our point of view, it's like, what's going on here? Is this a prelude to a whole batch of these things going bad?
Or
did we make some change internally that inadvertently affected that? Right. So it's, why wait to the 1500th failure before you take action? If they're jumping on individual failures, I mean, that's cool.
That is credit to them. And hey, this is the top guy. This is a guy that,
signs his name to project. The thing.
Yeah, exactly. Signs his name to the machine. If you buy the limited edition,
of course,
version, you get his name is signed on the side. But anyway, so he sent me the parts. You know, warranty covered. Even though I might be out of warranty, but because it's 90 days for pinball machines, it's not very long. And you know, they know that most people work on their own pinball machines, but this was an unusual failure in the fact that it's an old established part. But I took it apart and I took a picture of the two pieces, and you know, I said, look, if you just add a little metal here, you know, I could see where it's, you know, completely snapped in two around a particular mounting hole on either side. So I said, you know, you just stick in this and you could, you know, add strength to it, which would also guard against the variation in manufacturing. If one was, you know, the mounting hole was off center and you got a little on either side, less metal. And especially for a part that just is constantly receiving shock. I mean, it's
like a ball peen hammer hitting it constantly.
Yeah, thousands of times, thousands of times a day. And, especially when kids come up to pinball machine, I love watching them just double flipping all the time, blah, 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 you know, not waiting for the ball to come down because they don't understand pinball.
Yeah.
And
it's part of the user base. They got quarters.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, I think no pinball, somebody said, oh, you've got a great arcade in your house for set up for kids.
Oh,
I said, no, it's not for kids. Pinball is not. Is rarely for kids because they don't understand the physics of it. They don't understand. That's not like video games.
Don't tell that to the arcade owners. Come on.
No, the arcade owners don't mind.
Oh, no, they get a quarter and it takes them 2 minutes to get another quarter.
Oh, absolutely. So exactly.
You walk in, you're there for 3 hours.
Right, through very quickly. So the operators might like it, but they abuse the machine in the fact that they're just banging away at the flippers, you know, and I remember one of the operators would come out of his little cubby hole and go run over and, you know, get the kid to quit doing that because that's not the way you play pinball.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the bottom line is, you know, he responded, and then he also, head of designer gave me some explanations. You know, he tried to explain it. He also showed me an email where he'd contacted and sent my picture of my broken part to his quality department and, you know, asked them if they've seen something like this during their testing, and they hadn't. So it could be a supplier excursion or supplier problem.
Or a bad mold. I mean,
bad you know, crimping or drilling slightly off center where one side of the hole had very little metal versus mm-hmm. the other. I asked somebody, one of my pinball friends who also bought a new one, a version of this machine, and she had said that they got it and it was broken out of the box. I don't know if that's true and if this was the exact same part, but mm-hmm. I'm surprised. So, but I also don't think I was the 1 in 10,000 guy or 1 in 1,000. They only make several thousand right. pinball machines at any manufacturer.
But I think that's the point. And you and I talk about this all the time between ourselves and to clients, is that every failure is information. It's gold. You need to
absolutely
pursue that stuff. And knowing you, Kirk, it's sort of like running a mini halt test constantly on all of your appliances in your house. Yeah. but I mean, I think the bottom line is that, I mean, you get this machine, you know enough to what to look for. You saw a small part there and said, what is that? Because that's not typical. that's the key point.
I only saw this because I had another part failure.
Right. If you were a repair guy coming in,
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
And you said, you know, this, cup is not ejecting it. And so he goes in, fixes that, buttons it up and's out of there. Right.
Yeah.
May or may not even been conscious to look for anything else. Right. Now, some repairmen will, because they know it's good service to fix everything while you got it open, do everything you can to get it right. Right.
Well, if you see a plastic and metal part laying at the bottom of the box, that's what will clue you that there's
something that fell off. But you know, my point is, though, Kirk, is that that's what you do naturally. Not right. many people do that. And it's the same phenomena as when you are merging into traffic and you're looking upstream in the traffic. Some people just do not see a bicycle, you know, yeah. like you on the scooter is right. You know, you never really know if they see you when they're turning into the lane, because they'll look right at you and pull out. I've had it happen to my bicycle a number of times, but it's because we're conditioned to, we look up the road, we're looking for cars and trucks. We're looking for two headlights and we just are not prepared to see anything else. And so part of it was, you're savvy to say, oh, that shouldn't be here, right? They don't usually leave extra bits laying around in the bottom of the box. It's not a good idea. And then the other part that I think is cool about this story is that, you know, you're able to go onto these forums and get a real engineer-to-engineer type discussion about, well, what is this? Tell me more about it. You know, send me pictures, you know, and then they're able to fix it and make it right, which I think is good customer service. But I think the number of times you've talked about stuff failing and you call customer support, and I know I've had that experience, and they go, you know, have you restarted your modem? You know, I'm calling you about a broken glass in my kitchen. Well, have you restarted your modem?
Like, exactly. You go through the list. They're kind of a standard, you know, form that, you know, they don't realize you've gone, first of all, that you might have more than the average person. So, you know, this person, the designer of the pinball machine, I think recognized or saw that. But then I've told him about my book, and I think he's looked it up and he saw that I had some validity in what I was talking about as far as reliability. I wrote him back and thanked him for the parts after I'd repaired it. And then I'd offer another. One of the things I always find kind of just strange about flipper assemblies, and that they've been doing this for 40 years. One is with the rotation. Okay, there's a solenoid and an arm, you know, that rocks. The solenoid goes out, it makes the flipper go up, but it's about a 2-inch arm that linkage is to, so that the flipper, you've kind of got a around the shaft.
It deals with the angles. If it's too close, it won't bend it well.
But the way they've always attached or secured the armature to the flipper shaft is through a friction, just a screw squeezing a smooth piece of, I guess it's kind of split with a hole that, you know, when you screw the screw together, it clamps down on the flipper shaft.
Right.
Now, a flipper shaft sometimes has to do flip three balls, double flip. It takes a lot of
torque. What do you think they should do? Put a pin in there or something? Or?
Exactly.
I'm not even a mechanical engineer.
No, I know.
I'm not even a mechanical engineer, and I figured that out. I'll charge you for that one, Kirk.
Okay, for 40 years, they've had this design where they squeeze the shaft. And, of course, that requires, because part of it was I had to take off, I had to unscrew the mounting for this actuator,
right,
which is the same screw that tightens the each side of that armature that's open to squeeze it onto the shaft.
Right.
And it's just a friction. But, you know, yeah, you and I would look at it and say, why this thing is the biggest force is its instantaneous torque that you have, and you're using just friction on a metal to metal connection. Why not, like any motor or anything, put a key on it or key it or put a gears or splines so that it is absolutely, there's no question, and it will not slip from its alignment on the shaft.
Well, if it's been working, why change it, you know?
Exactly. You know, it's like, that's exactly what everybody thinks. But it doesn't, you go to arcades at a lot of some places, and I've seen this.
And the flippers are off where there should be.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. They're not at the right angle because, you know, they're using this grip and either
it's sliding around a shaft.
And it took me twice. I had to, when I put it back together, I thought I had it tight enough. But after a few plays, you know, one flipper was sagging way down, and I realized, well, the one I was adjusting, the other one was fine. And it did take quite a force to undo it when I first did it. So when they come from the factory,
they're torqued down pretty good.
They're torqued down
really
good.
Do you think they put some Loctite in there also? You would see it.
I don't know. They don't do that. No, I've never seen that on a flipper, but... But yeah, so I suggested that to this head designer, and he says, yeah, we've knocked that idea around, and he talked about, you know, some of the issues that they would have to deal with that change.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's just tradition. You know, a lot of people will complain about anything.
Oh, yeah.
This company, and I said, well, look, you guys are, you know, the dominant player, and one thing they did that was – a tradition in pinball machines for, you know, probably the same 40 years that pinballs have been, you know, something like that. And that is the power switch, the AC on switch, is always underneath the right flipper button on the bottom, underneath the bottom of the pinball machine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's been for every manufacturer, basically, that I know of, and every pinball machine's ever been. Well, suddenly, this major company decided to put the switch up on the back box, underneath one of the sides of the back box, so that you have to reach back there and flip a little, you know, toggle switch to turn the power onto the machine.
Right.
That was a big change, and I'm sure all the operators, you know,
where they got these machines packed together.
When you got them packed together, it's kind of, you have to really reach out and stretch. So, you know, I said, you guys changed that, and I'm sure you got some feedback on right, especially from operators that have them really close together or something like that and have to go turn on a lot of machines. And people would put little remote switches, you know.
Do it on something else,
yeah.
Do Wemo switches, you know, just push an iPhone. But, anyway, it sounds like this turned out to be a pretty good story for one of your adventures in repairs.
Yeah, I don't like, especially when you get a new machine or a new something, you kind of expect it with my 30-year-old machine. I kind of expect
you
something.
You needed some work, yeah.
It's got, and I replaced the coils on it, and, you know, it's been working fine. So,
well, there's a balance there, and that's probably a subject for another episode is, you know, the style of customer service you got. you know, I don't think he races that there were two failures that occurred for this relatively new machine, but it sure changes the dialogue if they would have said, ah, you're on your own. You're out of warranty. Don't bother us.
Yeah.
I mean, it could have really screwed it and you would have put this thing on the market and said, I'm never touching it again. No, you wouldn't. You'd fix it. But the customer service part and the care that's done to paying attention to symptoms of failures or failure modes or failure mechanisms mm-hmm. does really make a difference. And yet you and I have talked about it a couple of times is that many companies don't want to even acknowledge that there could be a failure because it's liability. It's this, it's that, the other thing.
Yeah.
And you and I are going, yeah, BS. Sure. Everything fails. Come on.
Well, everything fails. But most companies, and I've been a sales engineer trying to sell very expensive equipment where they've heard bad things about it. We
fixed that. We knew about that.
Yeah, we knew about that, or we fixed it. No, we haven't heard any of that kind of failure before.
Tell me more.
When you really know that has been an established problem, or, you know, you had to.
All right. Let's save this one for another episode. I think we'll go another 30 minutes if we start off on this route. But sounds like, I'm sure you got to get back to your machine and make sure it's still working. I'm sure the QA cycle hasn't finished yet. So,
well, it better have finished. But he did tell me about design changes, that they were planning on making for better reliability. So that was good to hear.
That was good. Yeah. But it's a cool story. Good ending. I think there's a lot of bits and pieces of lessons in there we've talked through.
Right.
But if you're listening to this and what's your, do you have a good customer service story? You know, where whether it's through a Facebook group or back straight to the company or to wherever, you know, have you experienced anything? Is this just a Kirk event here? or is some magic the way he phrased it or something? Or do you have one of those? We'd love to hear from you. As you know, we really thrive on getting feedback for the show and questions and comments that then go into creating new episodes for you. So we'd love getting you as part of the conversation. So head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And there you can find a widget that allow you to record a voice message, or you can write us a message. You can find Kirk and I and the other hosts on LinkedIn or on our about pages. All our contact information is there. So we, again, would love to hear from you. So Kirk, I don't know, is your finger twitching? You ready to go hit that flipper?
Yeah. No, I'll be playing, I play pinball every day. I have to sometimes go out to arcades and play there because I like variety, and that's why no pinball collector has one machine. You can't just, it's like potato chips, you can't eat just one.
And
you start collecting, so it's great, but we have fun even though it's a very expensive toy.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, cool. Well, right. We'll talk to you again soon, Kirk. Take care.
Okay, good to talk to you, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.